Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and happy June 19th, Juneteenth. Coming up, we'll talk with Iowans personally impacted by two landmark U.S. Supreme Court rulings this week. Also, we'll find out about the Iowa Juneteenth Digital Festival. But first of all, let's talk with Natalie Krebs, Iowa Public Radio health reporter. Good afternoon, Natalie.
Hello, Ben.
We'd like to turn to you for an update on COVID in Iowa. Yesterday, I caught quite a bit of this. The governor gave what she said was her final live broadcast of coronavirus press conferences. What did she say?
Yeah, so Governor Kim Reynolds said that she is no longer doing COVID-19 press conferences. At one point, she was doing them 5 days a week, then she went down to 2 days a week, and now it looks like she's just going to be doing her normal weekly press briefings, not COVID specific, and that's as cases are trending downward. And so basically, you know, Governor Reynolds said people have the choice to be able to wear a mask. They should be safe, practice social distancing. If you have underlying health conditions, don't go out. If you're, you know, over 65, consider staying in. And the state will be monitoring it, but, you know, no more press briefings.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said it's trending down. I'm looking at a graph of Iowa's new case numbers here on my screen. But we know in over 20 U.S. states, cases are increasing, even as states are reopening. Give us a picture of Iowa's coronavirus data at this time.
Yeah, so cases were sort of plateauing for a little while, and then now it looks like they're on the decline. But there are certain parts of Iowa, certain counties that are still experiencing a lot of cases. Story County saw an uptick recently. Dickinson County has experienced an uptick recently, which could possibly be tied to the fact that it's a really big county for tourism, so it's attracting a lot of people this time of year. And then the Buena Vista County, which had a reported outbreak at the beginning of this month, has, I think, over 1,600 cases now and was trending upwards for a while. So actually, you know, it depends on the parts of Iowa. We are seeing some counties, I think up to 10 counties, rural counties, where cases are trending upward.
Yeah, the other big counties remain Polk, Woodbury, Blackhawk, Dallas, Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Buena Vista there. I know you did some work this week looking at contact tracing in the state. This is where, contact tracing, very important in this pandemic, in that when we find an infection, we find out what other people who came in contact with that person. Really trace the virus, as the name indicates, right? What did you find out?
Right. So NPR did a huge survey of all the states, and I helped with Iowa and, you know, saw that just Iowa, the state officials reported that, you know, the state still has about 186 contact tracers, I think. And then on top of that, there are some people working at county levels. But it's still kind of falling way below what some of the professional health organizations are recommending. You know, one organization recommended, I think, that, you know, Iowa has over 1,000 contact tracers.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing, you know, Iowa's generally had kind of the same number of state contact tracers over the last couple of months, which often fall far below what public health experts recommend we have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's broaden it a little bit to health in general. I know, of course, you're a health reporter, and the Iowa legislature adjourned last Sunday after missing 2.5 months, sprinting through a shortened session that started at the beginning of this month. What in terms of health legislation did and didn't get done in that 2-week sprint?
Right. So looking at my notes from March in the beginning of the session compared to kind of what happened in that hectic, you know, last week in June when they wrapped everything up, you know, there was a huge push this session to fix some of the child care problems in Iowa. There's a lot of child care deserts across the state. And then also there's low reimbursement rates for child care assistance, causing a lot of problems for parents and providers. None of those bills got through. The House passed a number of bills back in March, and then the legislature was suspended, and then the Senate the whole legislature ended without passing any of those bills. Same with children's mental health system funding. That was a big thing. They passed that last session. And they were supposed to possibly attach some funding to that to start some more children's mental health services this session. And I was part of Reynolds Invest in Iowa Act. She wanted to increase the sales tax to help fund some of the mental health services. Well, that Invest in Iowa Act also didn't make it through, was stalled by the pandemic. And then other smaller things as well, too. There were several bills in place to kind of help some of the rural EMTs out there. I reported on that back in February. That didn't get as much attention as a priority, but also, you know, all of those bills, again, stalled, didn't make it through this time.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like the legislature has really a lot of health legislation to consider, work through when they reconvene in January of 2021, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, it's an election this year, too, which is what people have been telling me. So, you know, the makeup of the legislature next year, we don't know what it's going to be so far. Different people, different priorities. So we're going to have to see if some of these things that were really gaining a big push this session will continue to be a priority next session as well.
Okay, Natalie Krabs, Iowa Public Radio health reporter. Good to have you on that beat, Natalie, covering COVID and what's going on in the legislature, which wrapped up just less than a week ago. Natalie, thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, it was 8 years ago. Does it seem that long when President Obama instituted that plan that has protected more than 600,000 so-called dreamers from deportation? Under the program known as DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, qualified individuals brought to the U.S. as children were given temporary legal status if they graduated from high school or were honorably discharged from the military, and if they passed a background check. Now, just months after taking office, President Trump moved to revoke the program. He was then blocked by lower courts, and now this week, in a major defeat of the Trump administration's plan to dismantle DACA, has been blocked by the U.S. Supreme Court. It was a 5-4 vote. Chief Justice John Roberts, the swing vote there, writing the opinion as well. Here in Iowa, nearly 3,000 people are DACA recipients, and one of those so-called dreamers is Monica Reyes. At the age of 3, she and her 1-year-old sister came to the U.S. through the desert on our southern border with her mom. She's been raised in a number of places, among them New Hampton, and I believe now lives in Des Moines, where we're reaching her today. Monica Reyes, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You are co-founder, I understand, of Dream Iowa. That's an advocacy and educational organization for DACA recipients. Before we get to the significance of the ruling, I just want your pure reaction when hearing the SCOTUS, the Supreme Court decision yesterday morning.
Well, I think we all took it as very surprising, and I'm super excited for the news. I honestly was filling out my DACA renewal the night before, thinking that it would be my last time filling out my DACA renewal. And to patiently wait for the news the next day in the morning and be completely surprised that it was upheld by the Supreme Court, definitely excitement, happiness, and overall, looking forward to all of the young undocumented Iowans that will now be able to apply for the first time. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, the program was designed to leave our hardworking parents and family in the shadows.
Okay, so the 5-4 decision was not a rejection of the policy per se, but a rejection in the ruling of the way the Trump administration went about trying to abolish DACA. So this is a temporary block. We just heard in our top of the hour news that President Trump will file paperwork to get rid of DACA. The presumed Democratic nominee for president, Joe Biden, has promised to make DACA permanent. Where does this leave DACA recipients now? It's a block, but it's not permanent. So what are you telling other dreamers? What is the education? What's the next step for DACA recipients now?
Well, from the moment I first applied, I knew that the program is really just a Band-Aid. It has no legal status. It doesn't provide us with any legal status, nor any sort of pathway towards legal status or permanent status here in the United States. So either way, it has provided some opportunities through a shield from deportation and also a work permit. With this, with the opportunities that I've been able to accomplish, I've been able to buy a house, I've been able to get a driver's license, I've been able to advocate for our immigrant community in the state. We can do many things. And I hope that this decision by the Supreme Court gives all of us as Iowans some clarity on the importance of this issue and how we need to unite in support of all immigrant Iowans. For example, in the state of Iowa, SF 481 was a piece of legislation passed in the state of Iowa that forces our local law enforcement to collaborate with ICE, with immigration, and hold immigrants for 72 hours. And this is detrimental for the amazing police relationships that we've been able to create here in the state of Iowa with the immigrant community. So we need to take that away. We also end that and replace it with driver's licenses that will actually make our roads even safer for all Iowans. There's different things that we can do at the local level and create a better community for all Iowans.
Monica, it looks like public opinion in not just in Iowa, but in the U.S. is going your way. This is according to a new Pew Research Center survey conducted at the start of this month. About 3/4 of U.S. adults say they favor granting permanent legal status to immigrants who came here legally to the U.S. when they were children. Very partisan here, though, the results. The strongest support coming from Democrats and Hispanics, according to this survey. So in the time that you've been with Dream Iowa, I think that's not been that long of a time, but you've been here in the U.S., have you felt, you and other Dreamers really felt, the shift in opinion here in the U.S. from when you were first recognized by President Obama as Dreamers?
Well, I'll tell you, I grew up in rural Iowa, New Hampton, Iowa, Chickasaw County. And from the very moment I arrived in my community, the whole community embraced us as immigrants, as new Iowans. And I feel like we've been able to create those kinds of relationships as an immigrant community here in the state of Iowa across all sorts of rural communities. I can guarantee you, you'll see immigrants in every county, in all 99 counties here in the state of Iowa. And slowly but surely, we've been able to advocate more for our parents and for our families. And definitely through DACA, we've been able to gain some privileges that has enabled us and empowered us to be more vocal and share our story. For example, since 2012, when we created DACA, we have been able to travel the state of Iowa doing community meetings in all sorts of rural communities and college campuses and universities, speaking on the issue. And we have been overwhelmingly received in a positive light. And people have actually been changing policies and structures to be more welcoming towards immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have just a few seconds left. How much do you remember? I mentioned at the beginning, at the age of 3, you came with your mother and your 1-year-old sister through the desert. Do you remember that trek? Quickly.
I do not remember. My mom has shared the story with me many times, and I can just imagine if what it takes to survive that trip and for her to do that with the hope of providing a better future for her 2 young girls. I think all Iowans want people like that in the state of Iowa that are willing to risk everything for their family for a better future.
Mm-hmm. In 30 seconds, what is your outlook for Dreamers now compared to the start of the week?
I feel like this is a win because we are seeing that the Supreme Court is honoring the program and siding with Dreamers. I believe that with this, more Dreamers are going to be vocal. We have a mm-hmm. new generation. We have young undocumented Iowans that are graduating high school, and they're going to be even more vocal now and more empowered and into more professions across the board.
Thank you, Monica Reyes. Very good.
Thank you.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, today is June 19th. Juneteenth. That's a holiday to commemorate the freeing of slaves here in the U.S. And this year marks the 155th anniversary of the reading of the Emancipation Proclamation to enslaved black Americans in Texas. The final state to announce the end of slavery. Marcaeus is with us. He's a hip-hop artist based in Des Moines. He's appeared on IPR stages several times, and he's one of the organizers for Iowa Juneteenth, now virtual Juneteenth celebration online. Marcaeus, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, I have to ask you, in light of the worldwide Black Lives Matter demonstrations, how do you think this year's Juneteenth celebration will take on a different significance?
Well, I mean, I think especially about with this year's Juneteenth, the fact that the voice of Black Iowans can be picked up and heard from across the world without actually having to travel to Iowa, I think that's incredible. Black Iowans typically have never really had the opportunity to voice their concerns and things affecting their community, you know, personally, just because of the fact that there aren't any platforms here. There aren't any outlets for Black Americans to really do that. So Juneteenth this year, it's as unfortunate as it was that the pandemic made us, cancel our normal festivities. It taught us growth and taught us how to reach people that typically wouldn't have been able to be reached. So it's been incredible.
Mm-hmm. Is it fair to say that among many white people, Juneteenth is largely unknown and perhaps now known for the first time to many white people?
Yeah, and that's incredible because, I mean, really, anyone who's a true patriot or really about, you know, American heritage will celebrate Juneteenth at the same rate that you would celebrate Thanksgiving or Christmas. It's really, I mean, outside of the celebration of the ending of slavery and the reading of the Emancipation Proclamation, it's a pinpoint on a time in America where our country grew up, decided to try and attempt to carry itself in the manner that it proclaims to. So this is it's something that across the diaspora should be celebrated, and especially from non-people of color.
Right. You are African-American. Did you celebrate Juneteenth growing up?
Oh, yeah. We go to the Juneteenth celebration every year, Juneteenth Day parades. I mean, it was a normal thing. I think the only difference between, one of the major differences between now and then is the fact that, people are starting to get it off from work. So, I mean, it's like Juneteenth was something that we used to have to celebrate when my mom got off of work or try to sneak out of the house during the day or wait until Saturday when she didn't work. But now with the national attention, I think it's something that it's just become like an everyday thing, which is incredible.
Right. And back to these protests, these demonstrations, what's your reaction to the massive resonance these demonstrations have found, not only among Black Americans, but white Americans, Americans of all skin colors?
Yeah, I think something that most people are missing is the solidarity from in this movement, from the fact that our politicians and local leadership have been misrepresenting us for so long. I know from being out there myself, that's one of the main connecting pieces is, hey, your representatives don't say what you want either, huh? So we're all connecting on this. I don't know how to describe it, but I know for a fact that our voice as a generation is going to be heard. Like, we're not just going to play the pass it down the line game. That's just what you've seen, I think, is collectively everyone just having enough.
Right. Well, let's talk about this celebration online in the couple minutes that we have. What do you and the other organizers have planned? What's the lineup, and how can everybody enjoy this tuning in, taking part online?
Yeah, so yesterday was, of course, our award ceremony. Today, we're actually focused on health, healing, and history. There's going to be yoga demonstrations, live cooks, workout demonstrations. We got chiropractors coming through. It's going to be an incredible day. And tomorrow is the Neighbors Day celebration, so we have musical acts. I'm going to be performing a special piece. We've got Shireen Callister from The Voice performing. We've got more performances from their sisterettes. Really, you can expect what you were going to see at Juneteenth just compacted into a really crisp television-like program. People can watch it on DSM-TV, via Facebook and YouTube for free. They can watch it via our website. there's a number. I mean, we try to make it so that no matter what, you can click on it, pull it on your TV, and join in.
Right. So if I'm on the internet, if I put down Iowa Juneteenth and say YouTube, I'll find a live feed.
You will. Yep.
Okay. Very good. Okay. So we have that squared away. So beyond Marcaeus, beyond the demonstrations and this Juneteenth celebration, how do you see change happening? As a Black American, what kind of change is going on, and what is the direction you see all of this taking us?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's like, and I can only speak for myself. I don't ever want to cross that line, but I just use myself as an example. I mean, I think that the best thing to do is, as a people, is to focus on our economic situation. As a people, if we begin to practice group economics better, keeping the circulation of the Black dollar within the Black community, we'll start to see an echo of positive things happen. I think that, I mean, that's the reason why, you know, it's important for me to go out and start like whiskey companies and open distilleries. There's a reason that Black business needs to thrive. And I feel like I think that's the biggest thing that can help move the culture and the movement forward totally, is a focus on Black economics.
Mm-hmm. Well, Marcaeus, thank you for this conversation. Going out, I hope it's okay. I found a piece of yours from a couple years ago that we'd like to hear on the way out, called Subtracted Morals, one of your hip-hop pieces. And it sounded to me like the lyrics were really pretty spot on for the moment that we're experiencing, even though it's a couple years old.
Yeah, that's one of the most depressing things about being what people will call, label you as like a conscious rapper, is I feel like I've been on the front line protesting for probably like 5 or 6 years now. And just to see it, it's heartbreaking, man. But at the same time, I'm glad everyone is actually tuned in and tapping in and paying attention now. But yeah, Subtracting Morals is something that it's just nuts. It's not something that we should still be going through. So,
okay. Well, we'll listen to that now. Marcaeus, thank you very much. Hip hop artist based in Des Moines, and he is one of the organizers for Iowa Juneteenth. Check it out online for the next few days. Marcaeus, thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be right back in just a moment, but let's go out with Marcaeus and his work, Subtracted Morals. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We've got to find a way to stop it. They keep them at capacity so that they can make a profit. You can add it up. They want the money, so they add in us. Subtracted morals, they practically load the pistol up and clap it for you. Place you in them cuffs, same to gavel, slap it, torture. That's subtracted morals.
I don't know too much about it, Sergeant, but I got a hunch. I don't think I made a mistake.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, sir, no mistake. It's marijuana. The mama always said it'd be days like this. That's why I really shouldn't be like this. Speaking truth to Black
folks is how you get Black folks. Sad parts that ain't allowed to come from one of us. Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
So glad to have you on board on this News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, higher ed in Iowa, higher education, has been unveiling plans for the fall. The public universities, also Kirkwood. We'll take a peek at those plans with Vanessa Miller of the Gazette in just a moment. But first, let's get to that other landmark Supreme Court decision earlier this week for the LGBTQ community. The justices in the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that federal employment law safeguards gay and transgender employees from discrimination. But is this the last word? And what does this ruling protecting LGBTQ rights in the workplace mean for the future? Let's talk about it with Courtney Reyes, executive director of One Iowa, the advocacy group for LGBTQ Iowans. By the way, no relation to Monica Reyes we heard earlier in the program. Courtney Reyes, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we talk about this ruling, what it settles, what it doesn't, this was a surprise on Monday. What was your reaction when you heard the news?
When that first message came through, I was definitely shocked and surprised and overjoyed with that 6-3 ruling. We are always a huge fan when the Supreme Court can rule on the side of equality in such a large fashion.
Mm-hmm. And the 6-3 ruling, not just a narrow 5-4.
Yes, I think the entire LGBTQ community was rather surprised by that one. But we will definitely take that and use that as some leverage to make sure we keep moving forward.
Okay, let's talk about that. Where the LGBTQ community is now and where it needs to, in your view, move forward. How does this further workplace protection for the gay and transgender community, and what does it leave out? What is left to be settled?
Well, Iowa has had this law on the books since 2007. Gender identity and sexual orientation were put into our Iowa Civil Rights Act. So we know that folks have been protected here, but what that Supreme Court ruling does is protect so many people in other states, like our neighboring states, Nebraska and South Dakota. People could live maybe in Omaha and have protections, but then drive to their hometown outside of that protected area and be discriminated against because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. So we have to make sure that we keep moving forward, and we know discrimination happens even with these laws on the books. That is still something that is alive and well in our state and country.
Mm-hmm. So what are the questions not settled by this ruling? What are the situations that you look to protect for you and the other parts of this community in the future?
We are looking to change the culture. So it's one thing to have a law in the books that says you can't be discriminated against, but that does not mean that microaggressions and opportunity for growth and having a seat at that table and your voice actually heard and implemented. That's the kind of change that we want to make at One Iowa. And that's the work we do every day with training workplaces throughout the state, from cities like the city of Des Moines to a small company to very large companies. We try to get in there and ask people to shift the culture, because if you have just a couple people who believe that LGBTQ people should be treated fairly, that's not enough. That has to be a company-wide culture, just like you have values of a good work ethic and things like that. We need LGBTQ folks and all of our intersections to be highlighted so we can thrive in those environments.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruling, I believe, failed to resolve some related legal questions. What about, for instance, individuals, organizations, and businesses citing religious beliefs? Courtney, religious beliefs when seeking exemptions from widely applicable anti-discrimination laws, potentially even in employment cases. To put a finer point on it, shouldn't private organizations and businesses be able to have practices in line with their religious beliefs? If not, they would say that is limiting their religious freedom.
It definitely gets to be a very tricky response. Because everyone is a part of our country, right? You have the right to believe in your own religion. And it's really difficult when those religions discriminate against specific types of people. And so how do you respect that in a great way and then also treat people with dignity and respect that they deserve? And I think that I wish I had the answer to that question, the million-dollar question of how do we do that? But I do not believe that it is okay for someone to, my wife and I go to adopt a child and I can't do that because certain organizations, those are some of the areas that access to bathroom, adoptions, housing, things like that aren't protected, and we have to keep furthering those protections.
Mm-hmm. Is there a dialogue, I wonder, between those who would disagree over the issues you just mentioned, for instance, over religious beliefs? Is there a dialogue, at least in your community?
Well, I think we've had some dialogue just at the state capitol because a religious freedom restoration bill has continuously been introduced in our Iowa state legislature. And so that is that civil dialogue that we took part in just this past February of how is this impacting people's freedom of religion, but then also you're just discriminating against people. And so that conversation is there. And while I think that two sides of the coin, people have very differing opinions of how they felt like that went.
Mm-hmm. In your view, what has been the record recently of the Iowa legislature on LGBTQ protections?
Thankfully, we have that gender identity and sexual orientation in our Civil Rights Act, but this year alone, 14 anti-LGBTQ bills were introduced in the Iowa State Legislature. And after the first one, you start to feel worried. But when you get to the 14th one, it seems like a very personal attack on the LGBTQ community. For example, there was a bill introduced to remove gender identity from the Iowa Civil Rights Act. So that protection that has been there since 2007 is being attempted to be chipped away at. And thankfully, that bill died very quickly. But that's incredibly harmful to the trans and non-binary community, even when that bill is being introduced. What it's saying is you're not valid or human, and we will remove you from protections.
Mm-hmm. Courtney, you mentioned you have a wife, same-sex wife. I wonder, as a member of the LGBTQ community here in Iowa, do you have a personal story connected with workplace discrimination?
Yes, unfortunately, and I believe that I'm one of many folks that has this experience, but I was working at a small downtown shop and was very recently divorced and said to that person, told them I was getting divorced, and the next day my hours were cut. So that was the first blow. And then I came out a few weeks later to that person, and I suddenly wasn't being put on the schedule. Text messages weren't being returned. And then I finally got a call that said my position had been eliminated.
Mm-hmm. And this was in Des Moines.
This was in Des Moines. So we often like to think that we are Iowa nice and that is a value of our state, but discrimination is happening right under our noses. And that's why I believe the work that we do is so incredibly important, because mm-hmm. there's so much shame in that and so much questioning that goes into that couldn't possibly be. But when I look back on that about 5 years ago, I still get this pit in my stomach and know that in my heart of hearts that that's the reason why. Mm-hmm. And unless you have a supportive work environment, thankfully, my next job with Julie Haverson, they embraced me and who I was, and I was able to grow and thrive. And now I'm the executive director of an organization that this is what we do every single day. So, and I'm a cisgender, white passing human being. So I always think about my trans and Black and Indigenous and people of color friends that they don't have that same luxury where they have racism layered on that. And I think that this is a conversation that we must keep pushing for.
Okay, Courtney Reyes, thank you for the conversation. Executive Director of One Iowa, an advocacy and educational group for LGBTQ Iowans. We appreciate your time, Courtney. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, Iowa colleges and universities have been unveiling their plans for the fall. Maybe you've been following it in the news as perhaps a student or as a parent of students. Amid this global pandemic that shut down campuses in Iowa across the country in mid-March, Vanessa Miller covers higher education for the Gazette, and she joins us now. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi.
So all three public universities moved to virtual instruction in the middle of the spring semester. What do we know about the plans for the three public universities for the fall at this point?
Well, they're all planning to come back in some form. They want to have students back on campus. They want to give them as much of the normal college experience as possible. But they're doing that by employing a sort of hybrid model, too. So making online an option in many classes. So if a student, for example, becomes sick, they can continue their studies by watching the lectures online, for example. So they're adding technology in all the classrooms to make that possible, but want want to have students on campus again and living in the residence halls and doing those things. Of course, they're making huge changes, like adding some plexiglass barriers, requiring masks and face shields. They're limiting the residence hall occupancy to single and double rooms, where they used to have some triple and quads available. You know, they're spacing tables in the dining hall, getting rid of like self-serve and reusable containers. They're doing, even in the classrooms, they're cutting the occupancy in half. So a class that previously held 32 would hold 16, for example. And they're getting rid of large lectures, which is kind of a hallmark of the college experience for many students. So those will all be online from the get-go, not at the end. And of course, they're changing their academic calendars as well. So Iowa All right. State and UNI is starting a week early, and they're ending the day before Thanksgiving for the entire semester. Like, their winter break will start at Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Iowa, which is a big change. But they wanted, in explaining that, they wanted to give the students the complete on-campus experience for the fall semester. And they wanted to do it. They didn't want the kids to travel and come back, essentially, because travel is a high-risk endeavor right now. And they also understand that, you know, flu season is when more sickness is spread, and that comes in the winter. So they were trying to minimize the risk that way. The University of Iowa is keeping its normal academic calendar, but after Thanksgiving break, it's going to online only. So it's not keeping the full semester in person like Iowa State and UNI, because it also wants to not bring kids back to campus after sending them on airplanes and things.
Yeah, right. So in looking at all these new plans, COVID plans for higher education, are there some gray areas, some really tough situations to handle, learning situations that involve sort of clinical activities, hands-on activities? What do you see as these administrators really having to wrestle with strongly?
Yeah, well, they definitely, in rolling out their plans, have said there are some circumstances we're going to have to take on a case-by-case basis. Like, in a lot of these degrees and programs, they come with requirements. And so they've even noted in their plans, like, in terms of deans and folks making decisions, like, you may have to be flexible and eliminate some requirements in places where it's just not possible for the students to complete them under these circumstances. And then there's also individuals you have to look at. I mean, there's going to be professors and faculty who are high risk, and will they, even though the campuses are prioritizing in-person education, will those faculty be safe to come? And what if they get sick, you know, then who will take over? I mean, there's so many gray areas, like you say. And then for students, you know, who get sick, or students who are high risk, they're keeping some space in all of their residence halls available for quarantining and isolation. They're actually considering, none of this even touches on the fact that they're going to try to do their own testing programs and potential contact tracing. And I think Iowa State is requiring students, before they move into the residence halls, to get a test so that they know what they're starting with. And if kids need to be isolated, they'll put them in isolation. On the UI campus, they've indicated they may do assigned seating and things like that, so the contact tracing is easier.
So many factors. We've just got a couple minutes left of Vanessa. Very quickly to Kirkwood, the Cedar Rapids-based Kirkwood. It also has regional learning centers across eastern Iowa, a campus in Iowa City as well. A few words to Kirkwood. Are there differences there?
Well, they also are planning in-person education. They have not released as many details, but definitely are wanting to do the hybrid model like many of the others, where they have online options and they're curtailing large gatherings and big packed classrooms, but still wanting kids to have that on-campus experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk briefly in 2 minutes about funding higher ed in Iowa, taking a real funding hit that you've been reporting on from the legislature due to budget shortfalls, due to the coronavirus. How big of a hit are the Regents universities taking here?
Well, before any of this happened back in the fall, they had requested an $18 million increase in their appropriations that they would split 7-7-4. And instead, they got an $8 million cut, which we don't know quite how they're going to have to split that. But each of the campuses already was facing tens of millions in losses just from COVID through August. And obviously, the coronavirus is not over. But they've had to do refunds. They've had to spend more money on safety precautions. And then they've lost all these event revenue and different things. So they already were in sort of a tough place. And then this, that, not to mention the enrollment. The enrollments are going down, obviously, that gives a tuition hit. And then they froze tuition, which they were going to increase. So the students who are also having economic problems keep coming back to campus so they don't take too big of a tuition hit. So yes, no, they're it's a huge challenge. And the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences just eliminated 15 non-tenure track positions for the fall. Mm. So they're all scrambling to try to figure this out.
Huge challenges for higher ed in Iowa and across the country, to put it mildly. We're glad you're there reporting on it. Vanessa Miller, higher education reporter for the Gazette. Something tells me we'll be checking back with you a number of times as 2020 moves forward. Vanessa, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And with the end of this News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, Tony Daynard is with us, and another week when we can so use that groove into the weekend. Hi, Tony Daynard of IPR's Daily Soundtrack, Studio One. Okay, that was a sigh of relief that my work week is almost finished. What can you groove us out to?
A couple of new singles in our library, very timely releases from a couple of my favorites, actually. We're going to start with Shamika Copeland, an incredible blues singer, played a KUNI Blues Blowout many years ago. But she's got a new song out that just a couple days ago. This is a very timely, kind of hard to listen to, but also very hopeful song. It's called Uncivil War, Shamika Copeland.
Uncivil War. Uncivil war, how long must we fight this uncivil war? Same old wounds we opened before, nobody wins in uncivil war. We love is under attack. The spirits are back in rags, blue and gray. Thought they were gone, but they won't go away. Uncivil war, uncivil.
Shamika Copeland, Uncivil War. Boy, you're spot on there, Tony Daynard, picking up the news themes of the week. What else do you have for us to groove us out?
A new version of a classic song by two artists who have collaborated together before. The Austin, Texas band Los Coast, very powerful kind of funk and rock band. They've teamed up with Gary Clark Jr., incredible blues guitarist and singer. And they've toured together before, like I said, and recorded together. And this is a new version of the Sam Cooke classic, A Change Is Gonna Come.
Ever since.
remake of a nice classic there, A Change Is Gonna Come. Tony Daynor, thank you so much. IPR Studio One, your daily soundtrack, 7 nights a week, 7 o'clock. The best in new music and old favorites. Tony, Mark, and Cece, oh, what a tremendous treasure you are for Iowa Public Radio. Thanks for jumping in, Tony.
Thanks, Ben. Anytime.
Okay, let's go out with more of Change Is Gonna Come. River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Join us again Monday. I'll be talking about lab-grown meat. Yes, real meat that's grown in the lab. Would you eat it? I'll talk to an author on Monday who has eaten it and researched the lab-grown meat business. Until Monday, I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.